Namaste and welcome to Vedanta, the River of Wisdom podcast, a podcast that brings to you the ancient flowing tradition of wisdom that reveals you are pure being having a human experience. I am Swamini B, a Vedanta teacher and a Hindu monk, and your guide by the side. Let us flow, you and I, on the banks of the river of wisdom.
Prahlada was the young son of Hiranyakashipu, an asura who had tried killing him because he was devoted to Bhagwan Narayana. We had heard of his story in episode 271. Continuing, Hiranyakashipu decided that he would kill his son with his own hands. All the love he had for his son had vanished long ago. The fact that Prahlada was a staunch bhakta of Narayana was enough for him. The king made up his mind to put the boy to death. With a firm voice, he shouted, "Bring that son of mine here to my presence at this very instant. I will deal with him and his impertinence." Hiranyakashipu sent for his son, and Prahlada came and stood in front of him with folded palms after touching his feet. Hiranyakashipu spoke harshly to his son. He said, "You are a stupid fool. You are the son of a great king like me, and you talk highly of a mere deva who has no courage to meet me in fight. I have put up with you and your disobedience all these days, but I now realize that you have become a menace. You will be the ruin of the entire family. You do not respect me nor my words, and I have reached the limits of my patience. Today, I am going to dispatch you to the abode of Yama. Prepare yourself." The child stood calm and unruffled, as though the words of censure were addressed to someone else. And his imperturbable expression incensed Hiranyakashipu more. He furiously said to Prahlada, who was standing before him in the same respectful stance, "I have had enough of your hypocrisy and this assumption of a false respect for me. You have been harassing me enough with praises of my enemy. How dare you continue to do what you have been forbidden to do? How could you pluck up enough courage to mention his name in my kingdom? I've decided to kill you." Prahlada's eyes met those of his father. His were calm, while the father's were red and burning. There was a look of pity and sadness in the eyes of Prahlada. He said, "My father, you think that I'm a bad son, but the truth is I'm not. I only want to help you. Even now, if you listen to me, you will be saved. Lord Narayana is the most powerful of all the gods. He's greater than all the devas, greater than Brahma, the creator, greater than all the powers which are considered great. He is that which illumines the senses, the mind and the intellect. The world is created by him, sustained by him, and resolved in him. Please accept that he is more powerful than you. Lord Narayana is not your enemy. It is your own mind which is your enemy. It runs riot in wrong paths. Your mind is the enemy which has to be subdued, and not Narayana. There is no greater enemy than a mind uncontrolled, unsubdued. Please subdue your mind. Infuse equanimity into your mind. Let your mind be rid of raga dvesha, cravings and aversions. That is the only worship dear to the Lord. You say you have conquered the 10 quarters. How untrue. You have yet to conquer the 6 dreaded enemies which are inside you: kama, binding desire, krodha, anger, lobha, greed, moha, confusion, mada, intoxication, and matsarya, jealousy. When a man has conquered these enemies, when he has mastered his mind, when he has brought his senses under control, and when he is wise enough to know that the same Atma is lodged in the hearts of all, can he have an enemy? You are your own enemy, my father. Please conquer yourself. Hiranyakashipu was furious. He glowered at his son and said, "You think you are wise enough to teach dharma to your father, who in reality should be treated as a guru and honored as a god by you? But all that is besides the point. You say that there is a lord who is greater than me. Tell me who he is and where he is." Prahlada replies, "He is Narayana, my father, and he is everywhere." He looked unafraid, and there was no trace of fear in his voice or in his attitude. He stood calmly. Hiranyakashipu could also detect the respect with which his son spoke to him. Only, instead of pleasing him, it infuriated him, since Prahlada's words were not pleasing to his ears. Hiranyakashipu mockingly asked, "Everywhere?" His red eyes came to rest on a huge pillar in the council hall. He sneered at Prahlada and said, "Is he then inside the pillar?" Prahlada prostrated before the pillar and said, "Yes, he is. I can see him there inside the pillar." Hiranyakashipu looked around the pillar. He looked up and down and he could find nothing. He said, "I'm now going to kill you. Let the Lord you speak of, your Narayana, come out of the pillar and rescue you from death at my hands." With a loud cry, Hiranyakashipu jumped down from his seat with a drawn sword in his hand. With his strong and powerful fist, he hit the pillar. A terrible noise was heard. It was like the clap of thunder. The entire world trembled in fear on hearing the noise, but Hiranyakashipu was not afraid. He kept on staring at the pillar. Even as he was looking, the pillar split in two, and out of it emerged Lord Narayana. The Lord had assumed a terrible form. Glowing like molten gold, he stood there. His eyes, which were flecked with gold, looked at Hiranyakashipu and they were glaring out of the face of a lion. An immense tongue, red like blood, was lashing in the huge mouth, which was like a cavern. The tongue looked like a sword dipped in blood. The lion had an immense mane. Its chest was immense too, and the waist was slender. Waist downwards, however, it was the form of a man, a human being. Everyone who saw it was struck with terror. But not Hiranyakashipu. He stood staring at it and thinking to himself, "What a strange looking thing this is. It's neither a man nor is it an animal." Suddenly his mind went back several years. He was standing on the slope of the Mandara mountain, and Brahma was before him. He remembered the boon he had asked for, the boon of immortality, and he remembered Brahma saying that he was unable to do so. He had then said, "Grant me a boon that none of the things created by you should be able to kill me." Hiranyakashipu came back with a start to the present. This was definitely not a thing created by Brahma. Could it be possible that this was his death? Hiranyakashipu shrugged the thought away and with his weapon upraised, he rushed towards the Lord. For a moment he could not be seen because of the glow emanating from Narasimha. Hiranya hit the Lord with his mace. the Lord lifted him bodily like Garuda would a snake. Hiranyakashipu wriggled out of his grasp, and again he attacked Narasimha with his mace. The Lord caught him in his mighty arms, carrying him to the floor of the hall. Narasimha paused at the threshold. He placed the asura on his lap after sitting on the threshold. Hiranyakashipu looked helplessly around. The sky was deepening into darkness. It was neither day nor night. He smiled to himself and realized that this was his end. It was neither day nor night. He was on the threshold of the hall, which was neither inside the house nor outside it. He was caught in the arms of this beast, which was not a beast, and a man who was not a man. He had placed him on his own lap. That was again one of the boons he had asked for. He should die neither in the sky nor on the earth. With a strange clarity, all his words came back to him, like a landscape is reflected in a drop of dew. And yet, he was not afraid. He tried to fight again, but the grip of his enemy was too strong. He turned his eyes on his son, as if to say, perhaps what you had said is right. There seems to be someone stronger and more powerful than me. Placing Hiranyakashipu on his lap, Narasimha tore his entrails out with his nails and his teeth. The sight was dreadful. Part of Hiranyakashipu's boon was that he would not be destroyed by any weapon. Narasimha plucked the entrails out and placing them around his neck like a garland, he looked fiercely around. The world suffered agony as a result of his wrath. The sea was shaken into mighty waves, and the earth trembled in fear. The sky and the heavens lost their glow because Narasimha's luster had swallowed all other light. The clouds were scattered here and there, and the planets were all suffering under an eclipse. The oceans were heaving as though there was an upheaval in the netherworld. The elephants guarding the quarters were frightened because of the roar of the lion god. The earth was quaking since she could not bear under his powerful stride. The Lord walked with his dead victim and sat on the throne. No one dared to go near him. No one dared accost his angry form, not the Devas, nor Brahma, nor his consort Lakshmi. Standing far away from him, Brahma spoke words of praise. The Devas and Brahma, along with Mahadeva, said, "Strange indeed are the ways of the Lord. You are the motivating force in everything that happens. You are the one who originally caused anger in the minds of the Sanaka brothers. It was you who caused your bhaktas, Jaya and Vijaya, to be hurled into the world of papa and suffering. You are the one who made me deluded enough to grant all the boons which Hiranyakashipu asked for. And in the house of this asura was born the greatest of your bhaktas, devotees, and that too was because you wanted it. You made the father try to kill the son, and finally to protect your bhakta, you have taken upon yourself this task of destroying the wicked asura. Who can gauge the purpose behind your actions? We salute you in all humility." Narasimha was anger personified. When the Devas with Brahma had gone to him long ago asking him to help them to rid the world of Hiranyakashipu and his tyranny, the Lord had said, "When he hurts his son who will be my bhakta, his son who is untainted by faults like enmity and cruelty, who is tranquil and unruffled by the sufferings inflicted on him because of his devotion to me, then I will appear in person and destroy Hiranyakashipu, though he is protected by the many boons you have granted him. It was the Lord's anger against a man who had dared to offend his bhakta, which had taken the form of Narasimha. Long after the killing of Hiranyakashipu, his anger had not abated. The devas led by Brahma were not able to approach him, so terrible was his appearance. Standing at a distance, they spoke words in praise of the Lord. Then they went to Lakshmi, the goddess, and said, "Mother, only you can appease your Lord and his anger. The earth and the skies are suffering as a result of his coming. The clouds are scattered far and wide by just the shake of his mane. The planets in the skies are not glowing because they are eclipsed by his glory. The oceans are suffering great upheaval because the waves are being tossed about by his breath. The elephants, which are bearing the earth in 8 quarters, are all trembling since they think that thunder and lightning are striking them down, and the earth as a result is trembling, not being able to bear the hot breath of the Lord. The heavens are receding far away. The mountains are threatening to move since the earth is trembling. Unless the Lord is appeased, the world will come to an end, and so will the heavens." Lakshmi took one look at her Lord and her face went pale with fright. And she said, "I do not have the courage to approach him when he is in this mood. I have never seen him like this and I am afraid." Narasimha was seated on the throne of Hiranyakashipu and praises were reaching him from a distance. Brahma then went to Prahlada and said, "Child, the Lord took this form and killed your father because of the affection he has for you, his dear bhakta. It is up to you to appease his anger. None of us can approach him. Only you can save the world from his wrath." Without speaking a word, with his eyes streaming with tears of joy at seeing his beloved Lord, the young child went near Narasimha and fell at his feet, washing them with his tears. The Lord looked at Prahlada and his glance rested tenderly on him. He placed his hand on the head of the child after raising him up. Prahlada felt a thrill running through his entire body at the touch of Lord Narayana's hands. His papas were all gone, and at that moment was revealed to him the truth about Brahman, the limitless being. Prahlada's eyes were closed. His palms were folded together like a lotus bud, and his eyes were raining tears incessantly. He stood like a tree, and his voice was choked with sobs as he began to praise the Lord and his glory in his childish treble. "My Lord, you are inaccessible to Brahma and the Devas, to the rishis who sit in meditation for centuries, to wise people whose words flow like water, and who are very great and good men. However, all these are unable to have a glimpse of your form, and yet this low asura that I am, how could I have been blessed by the sight of you? In your infinite love for me, you have shown yourself to me. I am the most fortunate of all beings. They say that 12 qualities are dear to you: birth in a noble family, wealth, beauty of form, tapas, religious austerities, scholarship, skill in work, glory, fame, strength, courage, effort, and intelligence. What is greater than all these is said to be Ashtanga Yoga, which is supposed to lead straight to you. But you have shown me and the world that bhakti, mere love for you, is enough. And in fact, all these other things stand in the way of reaching you, perhaps. Even Ashtanga Yoga can be inferior to bhakti. I am sure of it. Or else, how could a mere animal, an elephant, get your mercy? The Lord I know is pleased only with bhakti. If a man has a beautiful body or a handsome partner or wealth as great as Mountain Meru or great mastery over the use of words, and if he has no devotion for the Lord, then what is the use of all these things which he possesses? Bhakti and nothing else pleases you. Lord, Narayana, all these gods who have assembled here are your devotees, and they are all dear to you. We asuras worship you, but the devotion of the devas is superior to ours. Even they are frightened of you. Your avatara should bless the world. It is for the sake of increasing the glory of the world and to make everyone happy that you have taken this form. Please shed this anger, my Lord. The asura who angered you is dead, and I am asking you to give up this anger for the sake of others. I am not frightened of you, nor your anger, nor your form. But I am afraid of only one thing, this dreadful ocean of samsara. That is what is terrible in form and unbearable for one who wants to be with you. Like the time when the asura servants of my father tied me up and threw me into the waters to be drowned. I am tied by the bonds of karma, which are of my own making, and I am being thrown into the ocean called samsara, which is a life of becoming. I have had a sight of you, and I am praying that my karmic bonds have been burnt away, that I will reach you soon. Lord Narasimha abandoned his anger, and placing the young child on his lap, he said, "Child, I am very fond of you. You are the greatest of the asuras and the noblest. I want to grant you any boon you desire. Ask me. I am here to satisfy all the desires of human beings. Ask me what you desire the most, and I will grant it." The Lord was trying to tempt the child with the things of the world, but Prahlada was not affected by the offer of the boon. He smiled very sweetly and said, "Do not try, my Lord, to deceive me and deny me the place by your side, which is all I want. I am an asura, and the asuric nature runs after objects of the senses. Knowing this weakness in us, you are trying to tell me that I should plunge into the ocean called samsara of my own accord? No, my Lord. I have seen you, and you know that I have always loved you. I am afraid of these group of senses, and I detest the objects of these senses. I think you are trying to test the strength of my devotion to you. One who asks a favor of you in return for his devotion is not a devotee, but a trader. I am only your devotee without any desires. And as for you, you are my Lord who does not expect anything from a bhakta except bhakti, loving devotion. Where does the need arise here for the talk about desires and the granting of them? And yet, since you have commanded me to ask a boon of you, I will not insult you by refusing it. I want a boon from you. I want your form to be in my heart forever. And thus, I should be able to have no place for worldly desires there where you are. If love for you is steadfast in this heart of mine, then the indriyas, the mind, the breath of life, the body, dharma, courage, intelligence, wealth, glory, memory, and even truth will all have to leave the place and become destroyed by the fire which is bhakti. When bhakti is firm, the first thing which goes is the ahankara, and with the ahankara will vanish all the qualities associated with it. When the person sheds the desires in his heart, he becomes as rich as you are, my Lord. I salute you. The cosmic Purusha, Parabrahman, Hari Narayana Narasimha. Narasimha had now become a Shantamurti, and everyone came near him, stood in his presence, and praised him. Lakshmi came and sat by his side, and he became Lakshmi Narasimha. He said, "My child, you will live till the end of this kalpa. Without getting involved in the world, you will enjoy all the pleasures of the world. You will be free of the bondage of karma, and finally you will reach me." Prahlada bowed his head and said, "Lord, please be gracious to my father. He was ignorant of the glory that is you, and he spent his entire life hating you. You were angry with him for his treatment of me. Forgive him and let him be rid of Bhagavad Bhakta Nindana, which is an unforgivable papa in your eyes." Narasimha said, "So be it." He smiled and added, "Because you have been born in the line of Hiranyakashipu, he and 21 of his ancestral lines have been purified. He has reached the land of your pitras. You may perform the final rites for him. I also want you to know that all your descendants will be dear to me." Narasimha then told Brahma, "You should not from now on grant boons indiscriminately to the asuras. It is like feeding serpents with nectar." And then Narasimha vanished from their sight. Prahlada then honored the devas and Brahma, and they returned happily to their abodes. The thorn which had been lodged in their sides for all their years of suffering had been removed. Om Shri Narasimhaya Namaha. In the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita called Vibhuti Yoga, Bhagavan speaks of his own glories and shares a sampling of his extraordinary manifestations. Prahladaschasmi Daityanam. Among all the asuras, daityas, I am Prahlada, and we now know why. Prahlada was exalted because of his unwavering devotion, his resilience and unshaken love for Narayana, especially in the face of the trauma of his own father trying to kill him, is something that we can learn from. He encourages us to remain steady in our devotion to and trust of the law of karma and Bhagavan. Narasimha Avatara's form, which is neither fully human nor fully animal, also teaches us that Bhagavan's Shakti can manifest in unexpected forms at unexpected times, and he will always protect his devotees. This story also highlights the concept of karma and destiny. Hiranyakashipu's fate was sealed by his own actions, and Prahlada's destiny was to be saved by the divine intervention of Lord Narayana. Despite being an embodiment of ferocity, Narasimha Avatara ultimately shows compassion towards Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu. It is a lesson in the importance of compassion and forgiveness, even towards our adversaries. I don't know about you, but every time I hear this story, or every time I share this story, I want to hear it again. There is something so pure and so innocent and so deep about Prahlada's devotion, which also serves as a reminder of the triumph of dharma over adharma, the power of bhakti and resilience, and the importance of surrender to the mysterious ways of Bhagwan in our lives.
You matter. Your life matters. What you do with your life matters. Thank you for listening. If you found this episode helpful and offering insight, I do hope you will consider sharing this with your friends, family, or on social media.
Would you like to receive an email every month that will bring to you more wisdom, more happiness, and more freedom? If the answer is yes, then our monthly newsletter, Arshavidya Bharati, is for you. It has articles on living our traditions, links to podcast episodes, articles and videos published elsewhere in the month, reflections about how Vedanta is changing the life of students, announcements about events and courses, profound Sanskrit sayings, and much, much more. And it's not too long. Do consider checking out this month's issue and also subscribe. The links are in the description of this episode.